move forward, Ms. Janet.
Okay.
Good afternoon, scholars. This is Linda Bessemer with Muses 3, and I want to welcome you to our read aloud with Janet Rehecki. And she's an author who's written quite a few books about dinosaurs, and that's one of her passions. So we're really excited to have her with us today. What I'd like to do is just very briefly cover a couple of things. I know you've probably all heard a lot about how we need to slow the spread of the virus. And you might be asking yourself, what can I do? And there are some things that each one of us can do, no matter how young or old we are, and no matter how big or small we are. The first thing that we're all being asked to do is wash our hands with soap and water. And you might say, well, how long should I wash my hands? I heard a doctor recommend that we should be washing our hands with soap and water for 20 seconds. Well, how long is 20 seconds, I thought. And then I heard someone else suggest that 20 seconds is about how long it would take you to sing happy birthday to yourself two times. So again, remember to wash your hands with soap and water for about 20 seconds, or as long as it takes you to sing happy birthday to yourself two times. The second thing we've all been asked to do is cover our coughs and sneezes. If you have a Kleenex or a tissue handy, that's a great thing to use. You should throw it away immediately and then wash your hands with soap and water. If you don't have a tissue handy, you can cough or sneeze into your arm so that the germs don't go away from your body towards somebody else. The third thing we've all been asked to do is avoid touching our face. And I know it's hard when you get those itches, but we don't want to touch our face with our hands or fingers. And instead, again, if you do have a tissue handy, you can use a tissue to kind of soothe that itch. The last thing that we're being asked to do, you might have heard the term social distancing or physical distancing. And all that means is that we want to keep about 6 feet away from people that don't live with us at our house. So if you're outside and you see a friend or a neighbor, you want to stay a certain distance away from them, about 6 feet away from them, so that if you should cough or sneeze, or they should cough or sneeze, the germs or the virus can't travel from you to your friend or from your friend to you. So those are all things that we can do to help. Today during the webinar, if you have a question for Ms. Janet, you can use the Q&A button, which is at the bottom of your screen. And there's also a chat button that I believe I've enabled. So if you have an older sibling or an adult with you helping you watch the webinar today and you have a question, they can help you type that question in. And that's how we'll make sure we get those questions to Ms. Janet. And now I'd like to introduce Janet Rehecki. She is our author for today. She is going to be reading Megalodon and Triceratops. The books are being read with the permission from Capstone Publishers. And Ms. Janet, could you give a special shout out to McKinley, who I know is watching, and also to our scholars at Houston ISD?
Oh, I certainly can. Hello, McKinley, and hello, Houston. ISD, is that?
Yeah, that's what we call our school districts here.
Okay, so. I'm from Chicago, so things are just a little bit different up here. In fact, here today, we had some snow earlier, so I bet you don't have snow in Houston, that's for sure.
No, we certainly don't, and we're kind of glad that we don't, so.
Okay, well, I am very excited to be here with all of you today. And I'm going to try here to say them.
Perfect.
Okay. All right. This is a book that I wrote a couple of years ago about the biggest shark that has ever lived. You might think that the great white shark is pretty big. Not compared to Megalodon. Megalodon was so big that it could actually swallow a great white shark in one gulp. It was that huge. And so let's see what it has to say here. Megalodon was a giant prehistoric shark. Its huge teeth were as sharp as knives. That's pretty sharp. And as you can see from the picture, there were a lot of teeth there. Megalodon swam in oceans all around the world. So he was in the Atlantic, he was in the Pacific, he was in the Indian Ocean. He was everywhere. About 30 million years ago. So this is about 35 million years after the dinosaurs. So Megalodon was not alive at the time of the dinosaurs. He came around about 35 million years after the dinosaurs were gone. Okay, Megalodon was as long as a city bus, okay? Imagine, picture the buses that you see on the street sometimes, those huge city buses. That's how big Megalodon was. It was about 50 feet long. That's 15 meters. 50 feet is huge. You guys are probably maybe 3-4 feet tall. This is, you know, 10 times as big or more. Megalodon had fins on its body and tail, just like all sharks did. You can probably picture from various movies and things you've seen of the da-da-da-da with the music going and the fins sticking up out of the water and the shark coming towards the poor swimmer. And that's because that's what sharks do, is they are fairly close to the surface when they start coming after somebody. But the fins weren't just simply as a warning signal. In fact, they weren't intended as that at all. They helped to get the shark to move through the water quickly because it helps to streamline the body. And then the tail can help it to move right and left. You might say, how do creatures breathe underwater? Because they all need oxygen. And to do that, they had gills. You can see the gills on the side of the shark's head right there, those little cracks there that open in. Those are actually open to the ocean water, and the ocean water rushes in there, and then its body is capable of taking the oxygen out of the water so that this creature can breathe underwater. So that's what the gills are for, is to help it to breathe underwater. Okay. It had a rounded snout. That's its nose. It's rounded there, you can see. But its jaws are enormous, and they're just filled with teeth. Not just the teeth you can see there, but you can also see a little bit that there are teeth stacked up in its mouth. So behind one tooth is another tooth, and then another tooth behind it. So it might have had like 800 teeth in its mouth at one time. And so they never had a gaping hole if a tooth comes out, because another one was ready to just right back in. And its mouth could open 6 feet wide. And that's huge. Okay, what did it do? Well, as you can guess, it was a huge animal, so it needed to eat a lot. And so it spent most of its time searching the oceans for animals to eat. It was so big and so enormous. You see that picture there? And that little bitty creature that it's trying to eat right there? That's a whale. It's trying to eat a whale there. That's how big it was, that it could take a bite out of a whale. And so that's one of the things that it hunted. And it probably spent most of its day hunting. When it bit into an animal, it couldn't chew its teeth. If you kind of take a look at those teeth, picture how well you could chew if all you had were like your front teeth. You couldn't chew very good. Well, there are no molars in the back of its mouth for it to chew with. So it just would rip off a huge chunk of food and swallow that whole. And then its digestive system could take care of all that meat in there. and so it just ate a chunk and swallowed it whole. All right. The most recent fossils that we find of Megalodon are from 2 million years ago. Nobody's found a fossil that's anything younger than that. We don't know why this is, that they are apparently all gone. We don't have any real clue. Maybe the oceans got too warm for it, or something changed in its environment and it couldn't eat as much as it needed to stay alive. We just don't know. What we do know is that we find teeth. And we find quite a few megalodon teeth, and they're displayed in museums. Now, in the picture you see there of the jaw of the megalodon, you can see how huge that is. That jaw is man-made. That's not a real megalodon jaw there at all, though the teeth are probably real, because all we ever find are the teeth. The jaws don't fossilize because they're made out of cartilage, which is much softer than bone. And so it disintegrates rather than fossilizing. So all we've ever found are the teeth. But those teeth are pretty cool, and they give us a lot to look at. So that is the end of Megalodon. And thank you very much for listening to that.
Miss Janet, I'm going to stop sharing because I understand you have an extra special thing you wanted to share with students today.
I do. All right. So I hope you can see me now.
Yes.
Okay. And I'm going to hold this up right in front of the mirror there, the camera there. This huge tooth you can see right there, that's a megalodon tooth. You can see that this is a very big, and it usually was a very sharp tooth. The edges are very, very sharp. I can feel that as I run my finger around the edges. It is very, very sharp. And it would have at first have had a sharp point at the top, but it's been worn down as it's bitten into things and bitten into things. Now, this is not a real megalodon tooth. I can't afford to buy a real one. It costs too much money. But this tooth is an exact copy of the real one, so that every little bump and groove and little bit is all reproduced exactly. This is called a museum quality replica. And a museum quality replica is such a good copy that it could actually be in a museum. So I'll show you, the back is a little bit flatter than the front. So that's a megalodon tooth. And that's a pretty cool tooth. I hope you think that it is, because I think it's totally awesome. So thank you for looking at my megalodon tooth.
That is very neat. Let me see if there are any questions about megalodon. I don't see any questions in our Q&A or in our chat. So okay. I'll go ahead and share my screen, and we can learn some more about Triceratops.
Yes. Yay. All right, here's Triceratops, and I'll share this with you. Triceratops is my favorite dinosaur. That's because he didn't eat meat, but he was big and tough and didn't take anything from anybody. So this is Triceratops. All right. I'm pretty sure that all of you know how to pronounce Triceratops. It lived during the Cretaceous period. Now, prehistoric time is divided into a lot of different eras, and the dinosaurs all lived in what's known as the Mesozoic era. And then the Mesozoic era was split into three different parts, the Triassic, the Jurassic, and then the last one to happen was the Cretaceous. The Triceratops is a plant eater, and it could grow between, say, 25 and 30 feet long, and about a third of that was its head. It was about 9 or 10 feet tall, so that's very, very tall. And look at how much it weighed, 6 to 12 tons. That is a very heavy thing, but that's mostly because its head, that's pretty much solid bone, that head is, and so that's what makes it weigh so much. All right, you look over on the side there, it says that a fossil is evidence of life from the past. Fossils of things like bones, teeth, and footprints, and also claws, are found in the earth, and those are what we learn about dinosaurs from. Everything we know about dinosaurs is from studying fossils, because nobody's ever seen a real live dinosaur. Triceratops roamed North America between 68 and 66 million years ago. So that's right up to the end of the dinosaurs. So Triceratops were some of the very last dinosaurs ever on the earth. Most people are very familiar with what Triceratops looks like. It's one of the most famous dinosaurs. It has a huge head, and then that thing sticking out from its head is called a frill. That bony frill is what makes it so hard to miss, because it's very strange and very cool looking. All right, so it is indeed a strange-looking dinosaur. Its name means three-horned face, and it looked a little bit like a rhinoceros does if you take a look at the picture there of a rhinoceros. Some people even call Triceratops a prehistoric rhinoceros, but the two animals are not even close together biologically. They aren't at all the same animal. In fact, Triceratops is probably more closely related to birds than it is to a rhinoceros. It wasn't a mammal of any kind. It was a reptile that eventually evolved into birds, that all the dinosaurs were. All right, so its tail is very short for a dinosaur, and that's kind of unusual because it has such a very heavy head. Most dinosaurs need a tail that balances the weight of their head. And so Triceratops, though, its head was far enough back on its body that it didn't need a counterweight. So it wouldn't topple forward, even though its tail was very short. Okay, the horn on its nose is very short, but there are two very long horns over its eyes. And these grew longer the longer the animal was alive. And then at the bottom, it has toes. You can see them there, and they're covered by small hooves. So that's kind of familiar looking as well. So that's what Triceratops is. And so when you think about the animals that are alive today, it's a very strange looking dinosaur. All right, so how did it grow up? We have lots of fossils of Triceratops. We have one showing almost every single age that a dinosaur could be, from the very smallest up to full grown adults. We know that they hatched from eggs, and that the babies had very large eyes, and its frill and horns were very short. Those would get longer as it grew. Its horns at the beginning kind of curved backwards, and it has the spikes around the edge of its frill are kind of rounded, and they got became more triangular as it got older. So in the picture there, those are not real dinosaurs, of course, those are models, but they are based on what we know about Triceratops. Now, when Triceratops became an adult, its horns changed directions. They curve forward, and the spikes on its frill, instead of being very separate, they kind of spread out and smooth together and look more triangular in shape. Now, the skull of it, it says there is about, it can grow up to 8 feet long. Now that's just enormous. You probably don't know anybody that's 8 feet tall. And it is, it's very unique that it's such a big, big head. Okay, so it's a thrilling frill. And we don't really know for sure what it used its frill for. Okay, we don't know. But scientists could make some likely guesses of what it might have been used for. For one thing, because it was solid bone, it might have been very handy in terms of an attack. It could attack somebody face on with those horns, and if the dinosaur that it was fighting struck back, it would be most likely to hit bone rather than a vulnerable part of the body. Also, it's quite probable that the females liked the males that had a big frill, and so it would have been a way that they could attract a mate. It also might have helped to dissipate the heat. The body, you know, that densely compacted of a body is going to retain a lot of heat. And so just as elephants can wave their ears and help to cool down the elephant, maybe heat from the dinosaur's body could escape through the frill. And that would help to keep the dinosaur from getting too hot. So those are some of the guesses that scientists have. All right, the horns, though, pretty much we're pretty sure it used its horns somehow or other to fight. A male Triceratops may very well have locked horns with another male to fight over a mate or to fight over territory. Basically, a very large male wanted a space, a territory that was all his own, and he would fight off another male that tried to take over. And then also, they wanted all the girls, and so they probably fought with one another about that. And then again, the females probably liked the males with the longest horns, because it suggested that the male would be strong enough to protect her, and it would show power and strength. Okay. And so the big picture there shows a Tyrannosaurus because it lived at the same time and in the same place as Triceratops. So it's very likely that these two fought each other. And Triceratops would have been one dinosaur that could probably hold its own against a Tyrannosaurus. The horns would help it if it was attacked, and they were sharp enough to stab even Tyrannosaurus. All right, so how did it defend itself? Well, it was been very good at protecting itself and especially taking care of its babies. All right, for one thing, they lived primarily in herds, and so there would have been a lot of them. So a group of them could stand together, shoulder to shoulder, with the babies and the young ones behind it. And then no way could any predator get to the babies past that wall of horns and bony frills. Okay, so even if a Tyrannosaurus charged at it, he probably couldn't get through there. Paleontologist Robert Bakker, who's one of the most famous, he was one of the very first paleontologists to suggest that some dinosaurs might be warm-blooded. And he said, no species that has ever evolved on land could withstand the full charge of a Triceratops. it was just too strong of a creature. So, scientists used to think a long time ago that its legs stuck out to the sides like a crocodile's legs do. But now they don't think that. Now they're pretty sure that the dinosaur's legs were almost straight underneath its body. They could move backwards and forwards in a straight line. He could also lock his knees so that his legs wouldn't bend at all. And that might have been the way that the dinosaur actually slept. Rather than getting down on the ground, some horses and cows sleep standing up. They just simply lock their legs together. And so they think maybe Tyrannosaurus did that too, because we can tell, because we have the bones, that it could have locked its legs together. Scientists think that maybe that the Triceratops could run between 10 and 15 miles an hour, but it would not have been able to do that for very long. It was simply too heavy to run for a very long time. But if somebody was coming at it, it could charge at that somebody for a short distance, and then you would have the whole impact of a running animal that might have weighed up to 8 tons. And that's just enormous. Okay, so what's for dinner? Well, Triceratops was a herbivore. That means that it ate plants. With its short neck, he had to eat plants that were close to the ground, okay? Probably ferns and things like that. One of the cool things about it is the front of its mouth was a beak, just like a parrot or a turtle has. And so that would really help it to just chomp through, because you know how sharp a parrot's beak is. So it could just cut through even really tough things like branches and the needles on fir trees and things like that. And, so it was able to nip things off really well and then chomp with its teeth. So it would have eaten things like ferns, cycads, and flowering plants. Cycad is one of those things that looks like a mutant pineapple. The bottom part looks like a pineapple and then it has things sticking up out of the top that are green and leafy. It's a very strange plant. All right. Triceratops had up to 800 teeth in its mouth. If it lost a tooth, a new one grew in, just like we talked about as Megalodon did. It had 3 to 5 replacement teeth underneath each tooth. So one after another would grow in. So imagine how much money it got from the tooth fairy, because it could lose all those teeth and more would just grow in. All right. What was the world like that it lived in? Well, it lived near the very end of the time of the dinosaurs, the end of the Cretaceous period. The world was much warmer then than it is now. Mostly we saw conifer, which are pine and fir trees, ferns and cycads covering the land. And there were also, for the very first time, flowers. Those did not exist during the Triassic or the Jurassic period. And there was no grass at all that grew on the earth at all during any of the times that the dinosaurs were alive. But the first flowers appeared during the Cretaceous period. Scientists think that the Triceratops lived on wide plains because they lived in herds and they needed a lot of room to spread out. They think that it was also probably close to forests so that it had places where it could kind of graze. Anyway, you can see there that the average temperature was a few degrees warmer than today. And that what's real interesting is that the middle part of the United States, all the states in the middle, like Kansas and Nebraska and states like that, were underwater then. There was a huge but pretty shallow sea that covered the whole middle part of North America. So that would have been a very big difference between what it was like then and what it's like now. Okay. The first Triceratops that was found by a man by the name of Othniel Marsh. And when he found those first horns, okay, he found them outside of Denver, Colorado in 1887. So we've known about Triceratops for a very, very long time. He at first thought that the horns were simply from a bison. However, as they found more and more and they were able to study them more, they determined that they were actually from a dinosaur. And the more discoveries that were made, the more we learned about it. We have found more than 100 different skulls of Triceratops in all over the place. In Canada, in the provinces of Alberta and Saskatchewan, they've also been found in Colorado, Montana, South Dakota, Wyoming, and Utah. Okay, so they're found all throughout. So there must have been a lot of Triceratops on the earth for us to have found so many fossils. Okay, now there are other dinosaurs that have frills that are related to Triceratops. And some of these are really, really weird looking dinosaurs. Okay, they're all called Sartopians and they have horns and frills. Pentaceratops, penta means five, and so it has five big horns instead of the three that Triceratops has. The horns over its eyes were very long, but it also had horns on the back of its frill and also some sharp, short spikes. Diabloceratops, Diablo means devil, and it kind of looks really pretty evil looking, doesn't it? It's a fairly recent discovery. And it had horns over its eyes, just like Triceratops and the others. But at the top of its frill, two very, very long spikes grew out of the top of its frills. Now, that would not have been useful for defense. Those are not in a good position to be used to defend itself. So those were most likely a way to attract a mate. Okay? Then there is Centrosaurus. And this had a long horn on its nose. Most of the others, the horn nose is very short, but its horn nose is actually longer than its other horns. On its nose, it had very short horns right above the eyes. And there are small spikes on the frill. And you can see at the top there, they kind of curve towards each other at the top. And those are kind of a weird sort of signature for that. And then Styracosaurus had a long nose on its, a long horn on its nose as well, but no horns at all above the eyes. But four very long spikes grew out of its frill. So there's horns there. So all of these, and there's at least a dozen more that had the frills and the horns, and each one is very different. Now some of these, the frill is not solid bone. There are huge, huge holes in it that were simply covered with skin. So that's another reason to think that these frills were more for attracting a mate than for defense. Okay, all right, so some interesting things to know. Triceratops is the official state dinosaur of Wyoming, and it's the official fossil of South Dakota. It has one of the largest skulls of any creature that has ever been found. It's almost a third of its body, okay? In 2002, fossil collectors found a Triceratops fossil in Wyoming. This discovery showed that Triceratops skin had bumps on it. This is kind of exciting because we usually don't know much about what the skin is like. But if it dies next to mud or something like that, sometimes a skin impression is made there that becomes fossilized. And so we now know that they had bumps about 1.5 to 2 inches across, and that it had scales on it, like the scales that you find on a crocodile's belly. And so that's kind of exciting to know that much more about the Triceratops. So unlike some other dinosaurs, no evidence of feathers. All right, so where did they all go? Many, many scientists, probably 99% of scientists, think that an asteroid hit the Earth actually 65.5 million years ago. Okay, we have found the crater where it hit. It's in the Yucatan Peninsula in Mexico. And we're almost positive that this is what caused the dinosaurs to become extinct. In that layer, we have found things like shocked quartz, which is what happens when quartz is subjected to extreme heat. We have found thousands of times more soot there than could ever be reasonably found. It's an element called iridium that is only found in asteroids that travel throughout the Earth. Because when the asteroid hit the Earth, they think it was about 6 miles wide, that it would have hit the Earth so hard, it would have thrown enough dirt up into the air to block the sunlight, not just for a few minutes or a few hours, for maybe as long as 2 years. And of course, plants and animals can't live without sunlight. Also, this crash would have started deadly earthquakes and tsunamis. And we also know that at the same time in India, a number of volcanoes were erupting like crazy over there. And we think that was a separate thing from the asteroid hitting, but it was happening at about the same time. And so all of this was just too much damage to the Earth. And I think something like 80% of life on Earth became extinct at that time. So Triceratops was one of the last dinosaurs to live on the Earth, but it did become extinct. All right, well done, people. We made it through Triceratops.
Oh, let me see. We do have a question, Miss Janet. So let me look at the question. Oh, McKinley wants to know if we can take the quiz on the Mayan book. I'm actually logged in as a teacher, so I don't have a quiz.
Triceratops book here.
I don't know if you...
You know what? I think that was something that they added to the online, because I do not have a quiz in my book here. I've got the book right here and there's no quiz in it. So sorry about that. But I if you wanted to ask any of the questions, I could tell you if I know the answers. It's always a little worrying there.
So I don't know if there are any other questions that McKinley or our folks from Houston ISD might have. I've got the question app open. Miss Janet, while I'm looking at questions, I didn't know, did you have any fossils from Triceratops?
I do, yes.
Oh, wow, that would be cool to see.
Okay. All right, am I on?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, I'm gonna hold this up as close to the camera as I can get it, okay? This is a Triceratops tooth. Now, it's not a real one again. All this stuff at the bottom here, that's the root. What you see here at the top, that's the tooth. And you can see that a lot of people say it's leaf-like. It's not at all like a meat eater's tooth, because it's kind of flat and it's more for like raking things in rather than biting things off. It could bite things off with its beak and then munch on it with this. So that's a Triceratops tooth right there. And if you want to compare that to a meat eater's tooth, I'm going to have to pull this one way back so it all fits. This is the tooth of a T-Rex. And as you can tell, if I cover up and leave only the tooth part out, look at how much bigger that is than a Triceratops tooth. Okay, this is a copy again of a real tooth, but it's a real, it's a museum quality replica, just like my other stuff always is. And it's got a ridge sticking up on the side. I don't know if I hold it up close enough, if you can see the ridge there. I'm seeing a mirror image, so it's hard. Maybe you can see that ridge right there. That actually sticks up away from the tooth. You can feel it. When I run my finger over it, I can feel it sticking up. And you know what a steak knife is like, how the edge of a steak knife goes up and down and up and down? That the word that describes that is serrated. And this edge on the Triceratops, I'm sorry, on Tyrannosaurus, there's one here, and if you flip it over, there's one on the other side as well. That is a serrated edge. So this tooth was literally as sharp as a steak knife, and it would just cut right through it, but you know, it could go through everything. It could go through bone. This thing was so sharp with the bite force that the Tyrannosaurus had, one of the strongest bites in the entire animal kingdom. Because of its huge head, it could just snap closed with so much force, it could go through bone. I mean, that was one fearsome predator. But Triceratops, he was the one guy that maybe could fight back against Tyrannosaurus. So,
wow. That is very cool. So one of the other questions we had was, you talked about the teeth, the number of teeth that Megalodon had and the number of teeth that Triceratops had. And we just wanted to confirm, you think scientists think that both Megalodon and Triceratops had about 800 teeth?
No. When I was, okay. I was remembering that one of the books I was talking about today had 800 teeth, and in my mind, I got it confused. I have to be honest here, I don't remember how many teeth Megalodon had. Sorry about that. Okay. But I was remembering what it said in the in one of the books, because I reread them both before starting out today, and I had the number 800 in my head, and I thought it was Megalodon, but I was wrong. Sorry about that.
Okay.
So even authors could make mistakes.
Well, that's certainly understandable, and we know you have an awful lot of dinosaur facts that you deal with, and that really is very, very cool. I'm just going to check my Q&A one more time. Okay, I don't see any other questions, and I don't see anything in the chat. And we'd certainly like to thank you so much, Miss Janet, for your time this afternoon. And for our Houston scholars, if you wanted to sign up for any additional read alouds, you can find them at https://muses3.com/php/ I believe it's index-readalouds. But I will put the, I'm going to put the screen back on real quickly. Let me pull up my, so I think I got that slightly wrong. Let me share my screen here, just so that, almost. So it's http://muses3.com/index.php/readalouds/, and those are all forward slashes. And we'd certainly love to have you join us for any of our additional read alouds. Miss Janet has one more session she's going to do for us today. And tomorrow we have Nancy Lowen, who's going to share a book called Show Me a Story and talk with students about writing their very own books and maybe even drawing their own pictures to go in the books. So maybe we'll get some new dinosaur enthusiasts, Miss Janet, writing their very own books, just like